So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Today, we'll be talking about the latest series of missions to Mars and why so many countries are spending more time thinking about, you know, launching probes and rovers and bringing them to Mars right now. What's the deal with that? And also, there's some news about Facebook and TikTok's acquisition in particular, which we've been following for a while. So we'll be following up on all of that. As usual, if you've been enjoying the Engadget podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. And you can drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. We'd love to take your questions. So everybody is going to Mars. That is, it's a weird thing to see so many Mars missions kind of coming to a fruition right now. So last year, we were at a point where the Earth and Mars were close enough where a lot of countries were able to launch missions to get to Mars faster than in any other typical point. It was just like a good timing thing. So we see three missions that are going to be coming up right now. So this week, the United Arab Emirates announced that they successfully put a probe around Mars. That was a $200 million project they launched last July. China's probe entered orbit on the 10th, so also this week, a bit after that. The U.S. has something as well, the Perseverance rover. That's going to be landing on Mars around February 18th. So all these things happening at once, and it is really interesting to see more of a focus on major space missions and also missions around Mars. The UAE, now that it's actually in orbit around Mars, it is the fifth country to reach Mars. China would be the sixth. And the UAE's probe is going to be orbiting Mars, monitoring its atmosphere, really focusing on the weather. And it's going to be studying global weather cycles and the way dust storms form. And we're also trying to figure out why Mars is leaking hydrogen and oxygen, because that's kind of an important thing to know if we ever set up manned Mars sites or anything for actual humans. And we also know, I believe the UAE is aiming to put a lander on the moon by 2024. Everyone's going to space. Kind of a big deal, especially for the UAE, which hasn't had like too much success in space recently, right? Any thoughts about this side of the story, Sherlyn?
I don't really know what the UAE's attempts have been like recently, but I do know there's a lot of interest in space. It makes sense, right? The world's going to pieces.
We gotta get out.
And we gotta get the heck out of here. And, you know, feeling like there's life out there will make us feel less lonely, hopefully. So, I understand the desire to look outside. And for me, just like learning all these space rocket names is part of the fun.
I'm curious that like none of these were actual. From what I've seen.
I mean, and India is actually the Chandrayaan from like, I think 2 years ago was one we followed. But this is one of the races that's going on. To me, it seems like the other race is the manned missions, right? Like, well, I don't know if any of these were actually manned. No. These were like drones and
a manned
probes.
Mission to Mars would be a much, much bigger deal than a lot of these things. I feel like these things launch
Just even into space is like a race right now, a challenge right now. So going to Mars with manned missions would be like a whole other race that will probably happen soon.
We're going to see a lot of things happening this decade, right? I believe China has always said, like, hey, at some point in the 2020s, we're going to have a permanent space station. In 2011, they were saying that was going to happen by 2020. Obviously didn't. Now the latest we've heard is like maybe by 2022, which still seems very, very soon. And let's talk about China's probe and what China's doing too. Their mission, Tianwen-1, it's an orbiter, lander, and a six-wheeled rover. And they're doing this all at once, which is kind of unique because typically either country just launches a probe or they launch a rover. It's hard to do everything all at the same time. And China's plan is to look at the geological structure, atmosphere, soil, environment, because it's going to be actually right into Mars. That's going to be much better than having a probe, too. But they're going to have both. And I feel like that's going to be an important thing. China is the first country that's going to be doing both the orbiter and rover at the same time. And maybe we're going to see more of these combined missions from Maybe we're going to see more of these combined missions from some countries too, just because the cost of launching and traveling there seems like, hey, you should probably do more than one thing on your trip. I believe the probe is going to be orbiting. It's going to be releasing the rover and also coordinating the landing and all that stuff. The Chinese rover is going to be there for 3 months, and you know, they're hoping it can learn more. You know, this also follows kind of a failure for China too. In 2011, they had a probe that they tried to launch to reach Mars. It kind of stalled. It got stuck in the Earth's orbit, and a couple years later, it just came crashing down to the planet. But now China has made some bigger leaps too. And yeah, the U.S., NASA has the Perseverance rover, which is going to be, hey, it's another rover from NASA. I'm not sure like what else they're going to be able to do, and I hope it lands there, you know, successfully. That seems like the hard part, because landing anything on Mars, because it has such a thin atmosphere and you can't like use parachutes, you really have to think hard about how you get something down to the surface. That's going to be an ongoing problem for all these countries. Do you have any thoughts, Sherlyn, just, I guess, yeah, in general, about the push towards Mars and what these countries are doing?
For sure. I mean, like, this thought kind of just came to me, like, calling it a space race. It is a race because it's a race for these countries to stake their flags on new territories. If you think about it, whoever finds things out first, or whoever manages to, set up camp first or whatever, is going to be able to claim... You have to think for the future when, like, we're trying to own pieces of these places. When by we, I mean the human pop race, right? I don't mean, like, me. But, like, you know, if Elon Musk's going to be there first, then, like, Tesla's going to own a huge, or whatever, SpaceX is going to own a huge part of whatever planet we
decide
to start off.
That is our horrific future where the moon just has a giant Tesla or SpaceX logo on it because Elon Musk got there first.
Like Ad Astra.
Like Ad Astra.
There's a subway on the moon.
Yeah. Talk about a movie that nobody really talks about, but the Brad Pitt starring film Ad Astra from a couple years ago had this. It is a wonderful, like, unique sci-fi movie, but it has this vision of the moon, which is just like a mini mall, right? It is like they get to the moon via commercial Virgin Galactic flights, and it's just like Subway and Sbarro and Pizza Hut on the moon in a base. It's just it's like going to a mall,
Penn
and
Station,
that's where we're headed, kind
Penn
of, right?
The Penn Station of space travel. Yeah, it's like it's as depressing as Penn Station or whichever little convenience kiosks you get into.
It's the Port Authority but that's on Ad Astra. The moon, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, nightmare.
But that's the Ad Astra take on it. I'm seriously hoping that that's not what it becomes. That's why it's, I guess, slightly more encouraging to see it's more like come efforts from countries rather than the private sector making it to these places first. That's why I feel like, you know, space programs are looking for funding all the time. But it is intriguing to see. I am curious to see with China's like efforts, like you mentioned, right? Like, will they beat the US? And if so, will this give them more like power over time? I don't know, but it's interesting to see.
Yeah, it's everyone's betting on space. This is a new space race, basically. Like, as you were mentioning, like in the 70s, it was, you know, the US and the Soviet Union. And hey, we over those years and since then, we've put 14 satellites around Mars across, you know, several different countries, six of which are still currently active, not including these new ones landing this week. So, you know, it is funny to see things moving so quickly. I'm interested in seeing more Mars study, not necessarily man travel. I don't think, think we need to be there. It is, I don't know if you guys have ever been to a desert, you know, but just going to a desert on Earth, going to one where it is both a desert and hostile to life in almost every way. I'm not sure that's the big push we need to put our money on, but I would love to study Mars. I want to study all the other planets. And certainly we can do a lot of this with robots and with probes and with machines that land and put, you know, don't risk human lives. But yeah, I wonder how fast we'll move on from that. Yeah.
A little factoid for our podcast listeners and our live stream viewers. I just want to point out that there's an article I read that translated the name of the Chinese rocket Tianwen 1 as like quest for heavenly truth. And like, that's a very literary, like a very prose-like way of describing it. The Tianwen literally means sky questions. So it's like, that's a lot to interpret from sky questions, but it is about like,
It's very literal.
Yes,
I have
Chinese
sky questions.
As
I
a
need
language.
Sky answers.
We have questions about the sky, but I will say that like Chinese is a poetic language. There probably is that meaning from whoever named the shuttle, mm-hmm. but you know, it's questions about the sky, which is a kind of nice name for
I assume
shuttle,
given that it know? Is it is for literally China's biggest space mission so far that yeah, they're trying to be a little poetic with it, but I don't know.
Yeah, the one they named before this Yinghuo 1, it's more like Firefly 1. So you know, that's a bit
And that was the one that
poetic,
failed and less poetic and it yeah. didn't make it out of our orbit. So there you go. Name your
that's
satellite
why they need
properly,
a better name
please.
Now.
Let's come down to earth a bit. Sherlyn, what's going on in the world of social media? You know, when I hear about social media news, it really makes me just want to go back to space and think about being on Mars for a while. So maybe I should rethink my plan about man's Mars travel.
I mean, on Earth, time has stopped. And we know that for ourselves, but also for TikTok, right? Like TikTok has been in this limbo with the Trump administration from, you know, being slapped with a lot of accusations and then this having to sell, then being ghosted by the Trump administration around the time of the elections. And then now we're hearing news this week that the sale itself has been shelved and put on hold indefinitely. The Biden administration is looking to review some of the decisions and the questions or the past efforts anyway, to handle some of these, you know, security risks, alleged security risks. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how sure I am of these.
Just to refresh, like, I feel like the whole thing about we got to have somebody in the U.S. own TikTok because that's the idea. TikTok was a security threat, but also it was growing so quickly. And the Trump administration was just like, I don't like that these teens are making fun of me. Right.
And it also really happened after they, right. Yeah. It also happened after they kind of owned him at some of their rallies that they all mass signed up for and then didn't show up. They ghosted him first. So then he ghosted them back. But the Wall Street Journal reported that some of the sources it spoke to say that the sale to Oracle and Walmart is put on hold indefinitely, which is honestly like TikTok.
Sure.
You know, I guess they're going to be fine with or without. Like, whether or not it happens, it feels like they're going to be fine. I think they're going to enjoy having their own authority without Oracle and Walmart around. I almost feel sad for Oracle and Walmart. Dev, do you feel sad for
I don't feel sad for any of these multi-billion dollar corporations. No, sorry. But I do wonder if TikTok is going to come back and be like, hey, U.S. government, you screwed up our business for an entire year. And it just seems like it's another mess that the Biden administration may have to clean up that, you know, the former administration left behind. Hey, I'm glad. It seemed like a weird thing, right? When we were talking about this and like Microsoft was saying, hey, I'm going to buy a piece of TikTok. Sure, why not? It always seemed a little weird and a little like opportunistic in a way, too. Like, oh, Trump folks are being crazy. Let's take advantage of this and buy this hot growing video app. There are questions about TikTok. There are questions about its ties to the Chinese government, too, for sure, as with any major, like, hot Chinese company. So those questions to me are separate from what happened over the last year. And a lot of it wasn't about those particular questions. It was just our, you know, tiny-handed baby former president had his feelings hurt and wanted to destroy this company in a way.
I mean, yeah. Well, in other TikTok news, well, sort of related, TikTok's big competitor, I guess, Instagram, has announced a new set of best practices for Reels, which is Instagram's TikTok wannabe, TikTok thingy.
TikTok clone,
It's own version of short videos that is not stored. Anyway, and it's kind of basically telling its users in its best practices not to recycle or repost videos that you initiate it from somewhere else. So basically, don't recycle your TikTok videos. And if you do that, then, you know, people will still see them in their feeds, but Instagram's algorithms may take them down or may not promote them because it was looking for the watermark that TikTok has on their videos. So
perhaps one of the smartest things TikTok did, right, is get that auto watermark that moves around too, so that no matter where people share that video, because it's going to end up on Twitter, it's going to end up everywhere. Yeah. Like, you at least know came from our app. Yeah.
Right. It's at the very least awareness of the app will be increased. And it's a bad look for Instagram, right? Because like all I see on Reels are recycled TikTok videos. But
Instagram's like, no, we didn't just copy this feature. We're doing something completely different, guys. Yeah,
exactly. But so the official reason from Instagram for doing this is that we've heard that low video quality reels, i.e. blurry due to low resolution or content that is visibly recycled from other apps, like it contains logos or watermarks, mm-hmm. makes the reels experience less satisfying. So we're making this content less discoverable in places like the Reels tab. Yeah. So it's all about for the users. It's all about your user experience.
Not about Facebook being embarrassed that TikTok's logo is all over Reels videos. Amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. So there's one good thing that will come out of this in the article that one of our writers, Chris Holt, wrote about this, which is it will at least discourage people from reposting other people's TikToks on their reels to steal that clout. So, you know, there is maybe something you saw on TikTok that was really good and you're like, oh my gosh, this would get me some Instagram views. You can't really not do that anymore, depending on how good Instagram's algorithms are.
There's always going to be a way, but yeah, I guess because if it's going to be automatically looking for that watermark.
Yeah. And not making it discoverable, right? It's not that you still can't see it on your feeds. It's just less discoverable, less promoted on the Reels tab, which to me as I don't really even watch Reels that much. I watch Reels of people I follow specifically, but this doesn't make a huge difference to me. And still might not encourage me to download TikTok, like a lot of people on our team have been asking me to, cough Dev and cough Julio.
Yeah. Listen, I get it. Sherlyn is not down with the hip new app that all the kids are into. I'm just more in touch with youth culture than you, Sherlyn.
Yes.
That's clearly what's happening
Had to explain to my cousins recently what the next gen lingo was, and I said lit squad fam, and then my cousin was like pog, and I was like, well, yeah, I am old. So
wait, why did they say pog? Because it just
pog
means
is
old.
The latest thing. Come on,
it just means old.
No, pog is no. They're just explaining that that's another bit of lingo that people use. Hey, send us your latest lingo, please. Tell us in the chat what the hot words young kids are using these days are, because
or just
I
send
sure
us complete gibberish and we'll make Sherlyn say it. How about that?
We'll make it hype. We'll make it happen.
We'll make it fleet. Yeah.
But Dev, what do you think about Instagram's moves here to prevent TikTok content? Do you think Instagram has a chance of finding of its users or its creators more content?
Not at all. Like, and this is the thing, we'll be talking about this soon with the way Facebook works, right? Like, we saw what Facebook did with Snapchat, right? They just stole the basic Snapchat stories feature, right? And that's all Facebook has been doing for a while. Whenever Facebook feels threatened, they either try to buy those threatening companies, and that ended up being Instagram originally, the first, startup unicorn, ended up being WhatsApp. But otherwise, Facebook's just like, we could just copy this. Nobody cares. Mm. No one's going to come and slap my fingers with a ruler, right? People may shout, but we're not going to get in trouble just by literally stealing features from other apps. So that's what's happening here. Rather than building features that are kind of fine-tuned for its audience and the way people actually use Facebook's apps, they're just basically bolting on features from others. And it is confusing. Like, I logged onto Instagram, I think for the first time in a couple of months last week, and the buttons are just in completely different places, right? The button for finding out where am I, engagement?
Yeah,
how can I see who liked my photos or who commented? It's in a completely different place. Everything is all rearranged. So it's like they keep doing this just for fear of being, overtaken by competitors. And I don't know. It just seems like they're always responding with fear. We're hearing that with a couple things, too. Like, let me just bring up, there's a report that Facebook is working on its own competitor to Clubhouse, the hot, hyped up, audio-only social network, which I'm not a big fan of. But obviously, if Facebook sees something getting traction and getting conversation out there, they're going
to
want to just copy
it.
And that's all they can do. And I'm not even a fan of the way Clubhouse works right now, because it's literally, it is a buzzy, hyped up social network. We have a good explainer of it in Engadget as well. It is sort of like just jumping into teleconference phone calls, and you can see who else is on the call and their hosts and people who can guide the discussion and everything. But people relate this to podcasts. It is not podcasts. It is straight up, you're joining these chat rooms. And it is a fun thing to maybe do right now while a lot of us are stuck at home and you're not going out and everything. And you just want to be in a place where you could just talk with other people or listen in on conversations. But I think post-pandemic, I don't know where Clubhouse really sits. The big thing is they've gotten some big guests lately, right? They've had Elon Musk, big celebrity names being talked, being in conversation with like notable people from Silicon Valley. It is such a weird insular thing that, yeah, I've tried it. I don't like it. I don't think it has much legs. But of course, Facebook's like, how do we copy this? How do we copy everything? Facebook is Microsoft in the 90s, you know, and that's literally what Bill Gates was doing back then.
I don't personally use Clubhouse. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to. And so I guess I have a question for you, Devendra. I'm not sure if you've used it because I understand it's invite only. But these are what? It's an audio only sort of app. Is there anything like a live transcription or closed captioning?
Not yet.
No. Okay, so already like...
Not yet. So yeah, right. It is a voice. It is a teleconference call, basically, or a large voice
group. Right, so it's for people with hearing. I mean, you can technically, if you have an Android or a Pixel device, use your like live transcribe feature to, you know, hear what's being said through the app, but... It always feels like they don't really care that much about certain types of users, certain groups of users, and they're like all about this one type of user, which so far my sense from Twitter and tweets about Clubhouse is that it's very Silicon Valley very,
and like entrepreneurial hype beasts and stuff like that too. Like people, there's so many people who are in the marketing world or who want to like build up their brands and they want to be in the hot thing. And the hot thing is this private club called Clubhouse, basically.
Right. Which, like, for the longest time, Clubhouse in my mind reminded me of Club Penguin.
Why?
Where, like, or is it Penguin Club? I don't know. I just thought it was, like, cute little penguins talking to each other.
I mean, they're cute little billionaires talking to each other and blocking reporters.
In the penguin tuxedos. Like yeah, okay. I guess that makes sense ish, sort of. But there's more. There's more Facebook news, isn't there, this week? Like, yeah.
So one other thing we learned, and I wrote up this news for us, is that Facebook is going to start experimenting with reducing political content in the newsfeed for some users. So it's going to start that with some users in Canada, Brazil, and Indonesia this week. And it's actually going to start testing that in the US in a couple of weeks, too. This seems like a really interesting idea, and it seems like they're finally engaging with the idea that, hey, Facebook has become this weird place where political content it just gets this sort of like rabid fan base and it's shared incessantly and Facebook ends up becoming a breeding ground for political instability and crazy things. Well, how do you feel about this, Sholin? Like, do you think this is a good start for Facebook's problem with the political discourse?
Political, I don't know. I honestly don't know, really, because I feel like people are stubborn. You know, really what's important is true, like discourse, dialogue, conversation, and labeling things and reducing the amount of like triggering things that they see. I think the labels were probably something that people were more likely to ignore. Seeing less or fewer political items in your newsfeed might help put people in a better mood, maybe just to like make them more open to conversation because they don't feel as defensive or they feel like, I don't know, that's like my take so far. For misinformation, that's definitely like it has to be banned. It has to be like blocked.
And they've been working on that. This is more like straight up just people talking about politics in a way. And I think also when you consider, you know, things like the time leading up to the Capitol insurrection, you know, early last month, Facebook and other social platforms were places where people got together and talked about these things. Even if it was private groups, it is still like your platform is being used for literally the overthrow of the government. And that's something I feel like Facebook is trying to stop a little. It's weird because this company has spent the past, 15 years just perfecting its algorithm and it's an engine for just keeping people engaged, right? Engagement was the key thing for a while. And now we're seeing the net effects of too much engagement. It's like, oh no, we are creating conspiracy theorists because they start reading a news post, right? That is just some random garbage and it brings them down a rabbit hole and brings them to this group where they start talking with other like-minded people. And it's often older people or people who don't have like many other social connections. So they end up feeling a kinship with these online groups. It is, it's a deep, dark web. Yeah.
I'll say this too. Like, we were just talking about Facebook ripping off of things like Snapchat and, you know, in our discussion about TikTok. And the reason Facebook is able to get away with doing that, I don't think it's the reason, but one of the reasons it still finds worth and value in doing that is because it's able to, it reaches so many people that Snapchat had never, it never just did. So the fact that Facebook ripped off stories, put it in Instagram, and then it's starting to put it, has already put it in Facebook. It probably will come to WhatsApp at some point. It's already in Messenger. So, like, it, you know, Facebook has this massive reach, and we know its influence is insane. Like, just so many people live their lives through one or more Facebook apps. And it's important for Facebook to consider, like, its influence on public discourse.
For sure. I mean, Facebook has...
nobody is using Twitter.
Close to 3 billion users now worldwide, like, across all its products. Yeah. Like, Facebook is... the internet for so many people, it is the main platform for engagement. That's why I'm so critical of it, because I do think this is a giant company that's grown so big and they have no clue what the hell they're doing. And so often, like, they just look back and it's like, oh, we messed up. Even though all the critics have been saying, hey, maybe you should do something about misinformation and people taking your platform and using it to influence elections and whatnot, which we saw leading up to 2016's election. Facebook, just as a company, has kind of refused to acknowledge that. So, hey, more things are happening. They're actively banning COVID-19 vaccine misinformation. That seems like a good thing that's happening now, because we need people to take their vaccines so we can get out of this mess, right?
I, again, don't know how much help that will, like, you know, contribute to the cause of getting everyone vaccinated, because, again, there's still going to be groups of anti-vaxxers talking amongst themselves, and yes, they will not be able to share links on their feed maybe about with misinformation, but you sure as hell can bet they're going to, like, send it directly to each other or post links or find a way around it. There's still, like,
for sure,
who are that stubborn, but at least this is one step.
I think the key is the newsfeed is just like the thing you see right as soon as you launch Facebook, and it's sort of like just a fountain of information. So if they can be like, okay, you got to work a little harder, like some friction to get to the weird, bad conversations that are enabled by our site. There's a net effect to that where you don't just like fall down the rabbit hole immediately. So I appreciate that. Hope to see more like active efforts from Facebook and others to kind of manage their conversations. Anything else you want to mention about Facebook, Sherlyn?
No, I think I've said it all, right? Like, just consider their reach and consider the influence that they have. And that's why it's important to make sure that they do the right thing.
Okay, folks, in other news, we're trying to figure out what's going to happen with E3 this year. There was a report from several sites that E3 would be turning its event into a digital thing, just like it was last year, which honestly makes a lot of sense. E3, or the ESA, the organization behind E3, has responded and said that they're going to be transforming the experience for this year. They're not saying how exactly. I cannot imagine. This is an event that happens when? July? We're not going to be doing an in-person E3 anytime soon. People aren't going to be getting on planes or staying in hotels. So, you know, give up on that idea. But I do wonder, why are they being so coy with this? That is just super weird to me. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts, Sherlyn?
I think they're not sure if they have enough news for an event. And I mean, the E3 before 2020 was widely panned as like nothing happening, nothing interesting. A lot of people are saying it was such a much less exciting show than before. Mm-hmm. And then you have the console launches all happening in the pandemic year. And then now it's like, well, what's going to happen? I don't know. Dev, you probably have more insight than I do.
We don't know how companies are working with E3. And the ESA is still reeling from what happened a couple of years ago, where basically a lot of private information from attendees, including journalists, including their phone numbers and addresses, got leaked out because the ESA were complete idiots when it came to data security. People had to move. They had to move their houses. They had to, you know, find new places to live because their families weren't safe, because angry gamers would take that information, just like send, I believe some were swatted, or like they just didn't know what these people would do. And the ESA holds a lot of responsibility for that. I don't think they ever really fully apologized. So, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with this event.
Yeah, that might be part of it. And I do think that if the ESA is considering an online show this year, it might be because it was looking at CES and seeing how that went and thinking that maybe they can replicate something like that. Not to say that this CES this year was hugely successful or anything, but all the shows are going virtual.
I think we're getting better at virtual shows. And they're also, I don't know if you've seen this, Sherlyn, but Jeff Keighley is a guy who's been hosting the Video Game Awards, and he's done, you know, the Summer Games Fest. So he's hosted these events virtually with, big companies participating and big guests and everything. And people follow his events because you get to see cool trailers for things. Some of those events have had free game demo weekends on Steam where you could just go play something new for a little while. And those are all things I think really won over a lot of gamers. Have to say, personally, I want to care more about E3. Since I was a little bitty gamer, it was a thing I would read about in Electronic Gaming Monthly and other magazines and be like, I want to go there someday. I want to do this thing. And I was lucky enough to get to go a few times. But where it is now, I don't think the ESA has done a good job of maintaining its relevancy. It should probably stick around, and certainly in digital form this year, but I hope they find ways to engage gamers more and the industry, get some of those demos out there. If they can work with Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo to get some quick demos into their stores, or even with Steam for people to play things over the cloud, I think that could all be really useful for a lot of folks. This is a place where cloud gaming could be better, where you don't have to install something on your system. You could just go into a web browser, play the first 15 minutes of this demo, right? That typically you would have to travel to Los Angeles to play. There are ways we could do this, and I hope we figure this out moving forward. Yeah,
for sure. Well, there's been happier news, I think.
Happier news? Are you talking about Cat Lawyer? Let's hear Cat Lawyer.
Mr. Ponton, I believe you have a filter turned on in the video settings.
Can you hear me, Judge?
I can hear you. I think it's a filter.
It is, and I don't know how to remove it. I've got my assistant here. She's trying to, but I'm prepared to go forward with it. I'm here live. I'm not a cat.
I can see that. I think if you click the up arrow next to this.
I'm not a cat. Let's make that is the current meme. And I feel like that just speaks to the heart of where we are as a society right now. I am not a cat, says attorney Rod Ponton, who was transformed into a cute little kitty cat with facial mapping during a recent trial, I believe, I forget what exactly this event even was, but he was working, he was talking to a judge. He was, there was the competing attorney right there. This was a very official event, and he was an itty bitty little kitty cat. And I just have to say, this is all of us, right? Isn't this your worst nightmare, Sherlyn?
I don't know. I think I would roll with it. I think I would have enjoyed being a cat, but I will say that I've been out this week dealing with family affairs, and I didn't look at Twitter until that day, that fateful day when Cat Lawyer was trending. The impeachment trial was also trending, and everyone was like, it's lawyer day, but it's Cat Lawyer day. And honestly, there were a few things that could make me really laugh or smile, and I was looking at that video and I was just okay, this is I can't help but laugh.
Everything, because it is set up a great comedy sketch too, because it's sort of you see the cat and then you hear the realization of the guy.
The cat's face.
He's oh no. And then the judge puts on his glasses, I gotta get a closer look of what the hell is happening here. I'm not a cat. And the judge is just I can see
it's,
that. I love it.
It's
love it.
Also
it is a perfectly executed.
Eyes.
And the cat eyes. The cat eyes are looking down at the Zoom logo oh, no, because they're mapped to his face.
Figuring out, right, this man freaking out at being a cat in front of this important trial is everything.
I love it.
You can hear it, the distress in his voice, the fact that he had to explain he was not a cat because the AI was just so good. It was insane. I feel like there's an SNL skit in our future.
It is, I mean, SNL right now will take the skit and milk the humor out of it so that it is not funny anymore. I don't know. But let's talk about what happened here. So we've seen a couple of reports that apparently this was a video plugin that was included in Dell laptops like a decade ago. So this lawyer is just on Amazing. A really, really old machine. And it was the default plugin for video chats, which I'm baffled why you would turn a cute cat filter into something that would be the default for Skype and everything. And I'm also shocked it just works with Zoom. Like, it was smart enough to work with an app that definitely didn't exist back then when it was created. So kudos to the company who has developed this thing. There are ways you could get similar filters on your system if you really want it. But yeah, these days you can actually get like things that are actually mapped to your face and look more more modern. What I think what's hilarious about this is that there's like the basics of face mapping, right? Like the face moves, he blinks, so his good. Mouth moves, but it is sort of like this janky 2000 era of facial mapping. And I kind of dig it. The aesthetic, if it was perfect, it was a perfect, you know, Snapchat cat replica, that would not be as funny. It is, you need the herky jerky, you need the eyes, you need everything to make this work. And, you know, he's the guy of the moment. He is the new BBC dad, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have two things to say just about this specific thing, which is one, the opposition's face is stone cold the entire time, which is incredible. He is not having any of this. He's like, you're not going to win any points from the jury just by being cute. And then the second thing is, my other thought was, what if all of your cats, because I don't have my own cats, but what if all of your cats' internal voices actually sounded like this man's?
I would be
like,
terrified.
We all think our cats sound cute as hell, but actually this is how they sound.
Why would you put that in my head, Trilla? Don't do that.
Now you have to think
about
it.
To be clear, this was a civil forfeiture case, so nothing sexy. It wasn't a murder trial or anything. It was just like a simple procedural trial, but it will now live on in infamy. I will say, thanks to the internet, I believe this lawyer was milkshake ducked pretty quickly, because later that day, and by milkshake duck, I'm talking about the meme wherein everybody's like, milkshake duck, this fun duck loves to dance and drink milkshakes. And then immediately after, we regret to inform you that milkshake duck is racist. Okay, like that's it's just what happens immediately on the internet. This happened sort of in a way, because I believe this guy was accused of using the power of his office to harass a former person that he was seeing. So not a great dude. Yeah,
that is so sad. That is so sad. I guess I will no longer wish that your cat's internal voice sounds like this.
No,
man.
Not at all. And yeah, shout out. It was Pixelated Boat. It is one of the genius tweets from Mr. Boat. And thank him. I thank him so much for it's him and Drill really describing the internet as it exists today and as we live in it. What makes you be worthy, Shirley? And how about some Overcooked 2?
Look, very kindly, people in my life or not in my life have sent me this news article about Overcooked 2 being free
to
play for a week around Valentine's Day. And I mean, D-Man, one of our regulars, sent it to us via Twitter as well. Our social media editor, Mike Morris, also sent it to me. And I'm just like, y'all, I already own this thing. Why do I need it to be free to play?
Who do you think I am?
But I guess. Yeah. I have the gold class membership to Overcooked 2. I don't need the free to play.
What comes in the gold class membership?
The Suns Out Buns Out bundle, apparently, according to this graphic that we're looking at. I would be interested in checking out the Suns Out Buns Out bundle. But I will say that there is probably a furious game of Overcooked 2 in my near future. If the snowstorm lets up, or we'll see. But it's nice to see, I guess, some people getting into Overcooked during this time. Valentine's Day, I think some of the articles were saying that this is going to be you and your partner's relationship test. And it truly is, honestly, a good test.
Really, really laying down the Overcooked snobbery there, Shalyn. Wow. like some people, for new folks. I do think if we ever record you playing Overcooked, especially if we get you doing it live, we get so much meme mileage out of that.
It's they're ridiculous. The most ridiculous things have been said, where like one of my friends when I was first introduced to the game, one of my friends is like an army officer or something, and she was like so mad at everyone, she sat us down and she was like, "You stay here, you," and then like started screaming at everyone. It was the greatest thing ever.
This is not the army. I imagine for you, Sherlyn, it would be like a Paranormal Activity, where it's just like you standing in one spot for an hour. If we sped it up, it would just be you like shifting, not moving, not drinking, not going to the bathroom or anything.
Excuse
just
me, like I said, I have the gold class membership. I play this solo. Like I play, this is kind of sad.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm so good that I can play this at least two player game solo and still win and cleared all the levels.
With a controller in each hand.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, no, just you switch players with the, anyway, give me some credit here. You know, I'm there like chopping things, frying.
I give you credit for being obsessed with Overcooked, and I would love to see the time lapse.
It'll be great.
Maybe we can make that happen someday.
Live. We can play this live. It'll be fun.
Someday. Let's move on to what we've been working on. And I'll let you actually lead the way here, Sherlyn, because I'm sure there's a lot of stuff you want to talk about from Sundance last week, which we didn't get to hear from you. What's up? Like, what were your favorite things from Sundance?
So Coda was actually amazing. So yes, I wish I could have had the time to really dig down to the Sundance chat, because like some of the things that Terrence really enjoyed, I didn't really enjoy as much as he did, but him and I have different tastes. It's fine. But
you just really wanted to stamp on his joy.
He loves like, we're all going to the World's Fair, which is something that I was initially excited for based on the synopsis, but it was not my thing, and that's fine. One thing that Terrence and I did agree on was how strange 4 Feet High VR was, and I wrote that up for our little Sundance roundup. 4 Feet High VR, I think it had the potential to be really good, like a good look at what it's like to be in a wheelchair as a teenager, exploring your sexuality, which is an intersection of topics that I've been looking at for a while now, but we haven't really seen explored otherwise. And it was a really stark look, but I think the filmmakers got a little too caught up in exploring the medium as opposed to telling the story. So it got a bit too convoluted. Like, it was hard to watch. Like, I literally had to spin around to just catch, like, to stay, you know, for on sure, top of the, sure. what's going on.
I kind of love that, though. Like, my thing about it, so I watch this as well, right? And it is 360-degree video, right? It's video you put on your headset and you're looking in one direction. You could turn around all the way. You can't really move, but you can look in every different direction. I do think compared to a lot of the things we used to see, Sherlyn, at, like, Tribeca and other film festivals, it does feel like the quality is better and the way they place the camera. Like, yeah, sometimes you may have to look behind you, but it's not always essential, right? There are reasons why you may want to watch this multiple times because you're not going to catch everything at once. And sometimes you'll be looking at something behind you. You kind of hear something. You're looking at something in front of you. You sometimes hear something behind you. And because it has, like, you know, environmental audio, you turn around and there's also something there for you to look at.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean,
I don't know. I feel like that was purposeful.
I do think, like I said, the technical and technological parts of it were impressively done. The quality, like you said, was good. Some of the animation, and there is some animation interplay here, was intriguing as well. The way it like was mapped nicely to the surroundings. I just kind of, there are parts of the story that to me it took away from, but there are still parts of the story that were well. I guess I had higher hopes for it than I might have.
Yeah.
The other good accessibility related piece to come out of Sundance, I think, was Coda. And Dev, you know, put us onto it by reminding us it won awards, I think. And I was just,
well, it won awards and it was also the biggest budget acquisition ever from Sundance. Apple has picked it up for $25 million. That's pretty crazy.
I saw that and I was like, good on Coda, because it's a pretty indie-ish film to begin with. And it tells a story of this girl. Coda stands for Child of Deaf Adults. But it also has this meaning in music. Coda means that little chorus you go back to, or I forget, my music knowledge has subsided, sadly. But it's got that like double meaning. It's a word with two meanings. It's ambiguous. And it's a story about this girl who's a teenage daughter of basically all her family members are deaf. And so she's like their link to the hearing world. But she wants to sing and she wants to pursue music and go to music school. And so there's that, like, it's a beautiful story that plays out really nicely. I think this is a clear example of how the filmmakers were able to tell the struggles, the very like hard to understand struggles of being in such a unique situation. And like, I was crying at the end of it for various reasons, but I was crying at the end of it because it's very moving. And I mean, whenever it does come out on Apple TV, I feel like our listeners, do yourselves a favor. It's such a beautiful, heartwarming story. You should check it out.
It is like, it is very much a traditional high school narrative, right? It is about this girl who's now cast. Like she is the person who has to help her deaf family, but they're also, they fish, know, so they spend every morning out in the water, and she goes to school and she doesn't change, so she smells like a fisherman basically. So it's things like that, and then like her, the way high schoolers just like ostracize her because of that, that all feels interesting but also kind of something familiar. We've seen before. There's her young romance. It is sort of like she has to break out of the confines of this family and, you know, fly and be herself, and it is that. But I think, unlike a lot of these movies, her family, you know, It's complicated. It's not just one thing. She loves her family, and there are reasons why she may want to break out on her own, and reasons why her family may be relying too much on her, and they need to mature as well. So it is a movie about all those things.
Yeah. I think one thing that drew me into it, when I started feeling like the tropes were a bit too familiar, but what drew me in was the music teacher character. I think there's a lot of likable characters here that you might want to stick around for, too. So we'll see. One last thing I wanted to shout out from Sundance is this experience called Beyond the Breakdown. It's part of the New Frontiers, which is like a mixed medium experience where basically I just signed up to join a Zoom call with like six strangers. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot of fun. I wasn't expecting it to be, but it was actually a strangely insightful and hopeful like conversation moderated by AI. Asking some questions about...
It looked like a video chat.
It was a video chat.
From my perspective, it's just a video chat.
Yeah, it was purely a video chat, but an AI was moderating where like it's listening out for every user and it's making sure everyone sort of contributed to answering the question that it was asking. And then when it's time to move on, it'll move on. I believe that when it senses things are getting heated, it'll also force a timeout. Like it did enforce a timeout during my chat, but not because people were getting heated, but
did they give you a tone warning like the Amazon thing?
That would be interesting. We didn't have that experience, but I'm sure if people get heated it would. But it was strangely like an interesting and hopeful experience because it made me feel like there are people in this world who want to just, you know, talk about building a better future. I think that's nice.
Sure.
I did a write-up about it on Engadget as well. If you want more details on why I found it so hopeful, I think that's something worth reading. So that was a...
Yeah, search Sundance 2021 for all of our stuff from the show this year. I like this thing, Julian, like as I was reading about it, just because it seemed like, hey, what if this was the way we could build a better society, right? Rather than just sit back and let like... people in power kind of make decisions for us, and not really they may hear you, but they don't have to acknowledge what you're saying or do anything about your complaints. Like it is such like a utopian vision for the way we could manage a society.
I enjoyed it, and I learned a lot about what different people in different parts of the world see as care, like, and how they want to live and that sort of thing. So it was good. Definitely check out the site for all our Sundance coverage if you haven't already.
Great. Anything else from Sundance, Shirley?
No, nothing much else from Sundance. Yeah, but other stuff I'm working on. I mean, I'm not going to be doing much this week, but I'm still testing that ThinkPad that I've mentioned last week, and then hopefully you'll see me get back to like full work stuff next week. How about you, Dev?
Yeah, on my end, I've got a couple of things I need to review. So I do have MSI's latest GS66 Stealth gaming laptop in, and this is the one with NVIDIA's new RTX 3000 graphics and a 1440p monitor. And I'm really interested in seeing, like, how are gaming laptops going to handle 1440p? Because it is better than 1080p, right? It's better than standard HD, which we've had for a while in a lot of laptops, but not as sharp as 4K. And I do think it's kind of like a nice middle ground. So I'll be taking a look at that. in general, for PC gaming, I've always liked 1440p. So yeah, I'm excited about this. I still have the giant Dell 40-inch ultra-wide monitor to review. It's sitting in front of me right now and just trying to make sense of that too. And, you know, stuff coming up. We got a bunch of things. I'm also working on a review of the new Studio Ghibli animated movie, which I'll be talking about soon.
Dang. I'm sure people are excited for that. That will tie into my pick, so I'm not gonna spoil anything right now.
Well, let's move on to our pop culture picks. What's up with you, Sherlyn?
So I have been looking for like heartwarming things to watch. And of course, my first stop was Disney Plus. And like I revisited some old favorites like Monsters, Inc. and Incredibles. I just like them because they have cute little baby characters. Yeah. Adorable. But I don't know if I've said this before on the show. I would love for y'all to like just make sure if you have Disney Plus, check out all the extras, please. The extras are the best thing about Disney Plus. Where like I didn't even no one had told me about all of these extras, or I would have signed up for Disney Plus a hella earlier. But for Monsters, Inc., there's like, sorry, from The Incredibles, there's like a whole separate section on Jack-Jack. Like there's just bonus content about Jack-Jack. It's great. Yeah. For Monsters, Inc., you get extras on like Mike and I guess his car, which I'm less interested in. I want more cute animated babies. Just give me more of that. Mm-hmm. So Disney Plus, if you have it, check out all the extras. The other thing was my actual show recommendation is, I don't know if you've heard anything about this. It's Resident Alien, Dev.
I have heard about it, and I love Mr. Alan Tudyk, so I will be watching
so
it
at some point. So I have seen the pilot at the very least, and I'm making my way through the show. It's a sci-fi show, I believe, and it's on Prime Video, if I'm not wrong. It's good. Very, very, very weird. Alan Tudyk is amazing in it. But the show is just so strange in a good way. The story is gripping. I kind of struggled to like the characters at first, but I've warmed up to them. It's definitely going in a very interesting direction. I feel like if you're looking for almost a procedural sci-fi mix plus a little bit of a small town vibe, this will get you. This is going to get you in all the right places. Finally.
Sorry. To be clear, by the way, this is something, it is on a sci-fi, so you either have to pay for sci-fi service or I think you can also get sci-fi through Prime Video.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can watch the pilot for free on YouTube in a couple places, but yes. I do want to see the rest of this, yeah.
I mean, it's pretty good. If you have to spend money on it, I feel like it might be worth it, but I can't decide for you what you spend your money on. Anyway, my third one is, I've probably mentioned this before. If no one's recommended you play Beat Saber yet, go play Beat Saber. Because Beat Saber is incredible. If anyone has a video trained on me while I'm playing Beat Saber, you'll think I'm cocky and arrogant as hell. Because I am feeling myself when I play Beat Saber. And partly because the music in it is good, right? Like... Let's ignore the very...
Debatable, but yeah.
Yeah, I know. Let's ignore the very electronic OST stuff. But they just released, I think fairly recently, the BTS pack. This is the Korean pop band BTS. And the songs in there are some of the favorites, like Dope, I like. There's some names I forget. Oh, there's Boy With Love, if you like that. Boy With Love is a little slow for me. But there's also, in the bonus songs of Beat Saber, there's also KDA's Pop Star, which I really, really like. And these are great songs to just dance to. And as I'm hitting these like blocks coming at me, I get some swagger.
So you're wearing a VR headset. Yes. You're hitting the blocks. Like, it's a very active game, right?
For people who haven't played it before. Less active than Supernatural. It doesn't, you don't have to move around as much. There's some moving around, and it at least gets you moving.
You could put weights on your arms and get like
that's
a pretty
better.
Decent
exactly.
like, arm
get like
out
a
there,
weighted bracelet and do that. But it's a good way to get your heart moving a little bit faster. The BTS pack, I shelled out the $16 or $15 for it because I knew I would enjoy the game just so much more with it. But if you have a VR headset, and it's an Oculus Quest at the very least, or any Oculus headset, I guess, the Beat Saber is a really good buy. I really enjoy it.
It's really good on the Quest, like I should say, just because you don't have any wires. Yeah. You're free to, like, as long as you find a space, you're free to, like, move around and have a lot of fun. it is sort of also the danger of VR, because you could get really into it and just like slam into a wall or swing and hit your TV, your poor TV.
Yeah, my poor new new TV is dented a little bit because I slammed my controller into the screen. I can't tell.
Amateur VR mistake, Shirley.
Ah, there it is. That's the scratch. That's great. Yes. But Beat Saber, if you're into VR games at all, I cannot stop recommending it. There you go.
Cool. We should do a VR-focused episode. Anything else, Sherlyn?
No, what about you? What are you going to tell me to watch this week?
Hey, so I'm going to tell you not to watch one thing, and that is that Studio Ghibli CG animated movie I was just talking about, Earwig and the Witch. I hate it. I hate it so much. It is an ugly movie directed by Goro Miyazaki, the son of Hayao Miyazaki. It's about a little girl who's placed in an orphanage and gets adopted by a witch and is forced to basically be their house servant in a way. The characters aren't great. It is it's by the same author who did Howl's Moving Castle, but this particular story just feels really weak. And what I hate most is that the animation looks like trash. You know, if I'm watching a Ghibli movie, I'm here for fluid animation and expressive characters and, you know, settings of nature that are so peaceful that they feel almost realistic. And I've been watching a lot of Ghibli movies over the last year because my daughter Sophia is in love with them. I'm very glad that she's into like good kids animated, you know, things, because there's a lot of bad stuff out there too. But the detail behind every frame of a Ghibli movie, you know, is astounding. This movie, I'm working on that review right now. It just feels like a huge letdown. It's really ugly. The characters are like, they're horrifying. There's no detail around them. There's nothing. Everybody looks like kind of a plastic cartoon doll. The animation isn't very expressive and the environments are all right. Like, I feel like Ghibli has used CG for certain things, like scenes of flowers and Spirited Away and certain things in Mononoke, but never for a full movie like this. And I think it's horrific. I think it is a travesty. I hope this is just like a thing that they made to, you know, fund Hayao Miyazaki's next movie. And I hope, I don't want to see too much of this. We've seen a lot of bad CG anime. Like, I'm at a point where I feel personally affronted by the existence of like stiff CG anime things. The most recent Ghost in the Shell show, a series that I love, looks like absolute garbage. And I'm just angry about it as like a longtime anime fan and somebody who appreciates the way animation lets you do anything, right? Animation is... it is a medium with limitless potential. You can have huge explosions. You can have big budget, you know, sequences. The only cost is the level of detail for the animation, right? And CG has a way of simplifying that. But I think this particular movie shows that CG just can't erase that, the magic of animation, so much. Where it's just like, you don't want to watch this thing. So yeah, I hate it. Do not recommend Earwig and the Witch.
I am glad you said that because I saw it on Netflix and was about to click through to watch it because I was like, oh, it could be a heartwarming cartoon thing. And then I read the synopsis and I'm like, this doesn't sound good. This just doesn't sound good. I'm glad that like I didn't even know it was Studio Ghibli. So that was interesting to like hear you say that. I'm glad I'll give it a pass.
I'm working on a thing. I need like more time to actually finish this review because there's all this other stuff happening this week. But yeah, there's that one movie I do want to recommend that you all rent and check out. And it's a little controversial. It is Promising Young Woman by Emerald Fennell. And this is a movie starring Carey Mulligan, who plays sort of an avenging angel against men in a way. Like it's a film about the repercussions of assault and the way that affects, you know, the lives of people around you. And, you know, in this movie, her friend was assaulted and basically committed suicide because of all those issues, because of her experience, right? And now Carey Mulligan's character spends almost every night going out, trying to make herself feel vulnerable and taking in guys who could potentially, you know, who are trying to take advantage of her. And it's all about her turning the tables on them and being like, hey, guy, what are you doing here? It is a really interesting movie. I feel like there's a lot going on here. It is super sharp. It has some of the best music I've heard, or at least best musical choices in the film. And this is the directorial debut of Emerald Fennell, who, you know, she's an actor. She's on The Crown, and, you know, she's been in a bunch of stuff lately. I believe she was behind the second season of Killing Eve, which wasn't as good as the first season, but I really enjoyed still overall. I'd recommend you check out this movie. Just be prepared for a blowout ending. Like, you may end up hating this movie, you may end up loving it, but I think it is like a pure artistic expression. And I hope more people see it, and I hope more people get to talk about it. And hey, we talked about it on the Slash Filmcast most recently, so you could check out our review of that there too.
Well, that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter. Maybe you can find my secret TikTok account somewhere. And I podcast about movies and TV at the Slash Filmcast at slashfilm.com.
If you have cute animated babies or puppies, or I guess kittens, to share, you can send them my way on Twitter at Sherlinlow. Email us your thoughts and feedback at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.